Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Indian Railway Finance Corporation Limited Q4 and FY22 conference call hosted by DAM Capital Advisors Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Pritesh Bumb. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Pritesh Bumb.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. We on behalf of DAM Capital would like to welcome the management of Indian Railway Finance Corporation. Today we have with us Mr. Amitabh Banerjee, Chairman and MD, along with Director of Finance and other members of the management team. We will have opening remarks from the CMD and then move on to the Q&A. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Okay. Good afternoon, all my dear friends. We have come to the end of another year, this 2021-22, and we've got a very robust financial performance this year too. I'll just go through the presentation that has been already circulated to you. Hopefully, everybody has got it. Going to the first slide. IRFC plays a very strategic role in the growth of Indian Railways. This has been, you know, this has been the story since 1986 when we were formed as a special purpose vehicle of Indian Railways to be the sole borrowing arm to fund its CapEx requirements, the capital expenditure requirements of Indian Railways. Now, this is the dedicated market borrowing arm, and the AUM, the asset under management, has grown very rapidly at a rate of 15.32% year-on-year. As on date, it stands at 4.15 lakh crore, that is 4,15,238 crore approximately. It's a business which is characterized by low risk, and it's a cost-plus business model. All the costs incidental to lending and borrowing and the borrowing are all passed through to Ministry of Railways, including the cost of hedging. It's a low risk business model for obvious reasons, because no cost is being borne by us, although the margin is not that substantial that we charge on the cost element. We have got a strategic relationship with the Ministry of Railways, and that enables us to have a low risk profile and also a very high credit rating from both the domestic and the international credit rating agencies. We enter into a cost-plus standard lease agreement every year with Ministry of Railways, and there is a consistent spread on that we charge over the weighted average cost of borrowing on both the rolling stock assets as well as the project assets. The long-term ratings from ICRA, CRISIL and CARE are all AAA. That has been the trend all through its journey. We are rated at par with the sovereign as far as the overseas credit rating agencies like Moody's, Standard & Poor's, Fitch and Japanese credit rating agency are concerned. There's a diversified funding source that we have, which covers various maturities and currencies of loans. And we also keep the cost of borrowing very, very low. That is the basic mandate of IRFC. You must all remember that the basic mandate of IRFC is to afford least cost funding to Ministry of Railways with a view to making the underlying projects and the underlying assets viable in the long run. IRFC borrows on a long-term basis to align with the long-term tenure of the assets financed. We have ALM as our major focus. Asset liability management is the major focus of IRFC, this being an NBFC. The net worth of the company has grown to about 41,000 crore with a profit with a growth of, you know, in fact, the revenue from operations has grown by about 29% year-on-year to end of this financial year, and the profit has grown at 38% year-on-year in FY22. We are characterized by low overheads and administrative costs and a very high operational efficiency. Probably we are one of the, you know, least cost companies in the world. Only 0.13% of our total revenue is the establishment cost of this company. And the return ratios are also pretty healthy at the return on net worth at about 15%, return on assets at about 1.5%, which compares well with the industry average. As on date, we are not paying any tax, not because we are exempt from any tax, but because of the existence of unabsorbed depreciation balance, which helps me in keeping the taxable income at zero. Now, if you go to the next slide, it shows the coverage of Indian railway network per million population, which is relatively low. At the end of FY 2017, it was about 50 kilometers per million population, as against 600 in Russia or about more than 460 in USA. So there is a lot of scope for capex expansion of Indian railways. IRFC has been funding at a very consistent level to Ministry of Railways. It went up from 36% in FY 2018. It has been moving up to about 48.2% in FY 20. It went up to a peak level of 67.3% in FY 2021. The next slide shows the breakup of the AUM. About 50% of the total AUM is accounted for by the project assets, 48% by the rolling stock assets. That means the lease receivables from loading stock is 48%. And the lease receivables on account of the project assets is about 50%, it's almost half. And the rest of it is to the other SPVs that we have given money to, that is the loans to, that is RVNL and IRCON, which accounts for only 2%. last year, the disbursements were of your order of about 60,000 crore. We have been charging a uniform spread of about 40 bits on the weighted average cost as far as the rolling stock assets are concerned, and 35 bits over the project assets. 35 bits over the weighted average cost while arriving at the lease charges for project assets. Next slide, as I have already mentioned, shows the rating of IRFC, which is AAA at the domestic level and the sovereign rating at the international level. If you look at the borrowing mix as on 31st of March 2022, term loan accounts for 33% of my total portfolio. Bonds are maximum at about 44% of the total portfolio, which includes the 54EC capital gain exemption bonds also. National Savings Fund, which is at about 17,500 crore, that accounts for about 4% of our total borrowing portfolio. And external commercial borrowing is at 17% of our total borrowing portfolio. If you look at the other financial parameters, the net interest income and the PAT, so the profit after tax, as I've already mentioned, is about 6,090 crores this year. And as I've already told you, operating expenses at 0.13%. Return on equity and return on assets, I've already mentioned earlier. The capital adequacy ratio is now at 440% as against 420% to end of last year. And the net gearing ratio, the leveraging ratio, stands at 9.47. Now, the net interest margin is about 1.6%. Return on equity, as I have mentioned already, is hovering around 15%. And the earning per share today stands at 4.66. Now, I've already mentioned, and the revenue from operations is at 20,300 crores to end of March 31, 2022. And other recent developments that has come about in the journey of IRFC is that we have been ranked 96th in the Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 500 Indian companies. And this 96th rank has been obtained on the basis of 2021 results. So we are awaiting the rank based on 2021-22 results also in a short while. And we are sure that we must have moved a few notches above. Higher. This year we have raised a green loan. This is the first of its kind. We have raised a green loan of 1.1 billion USD in yen terms from a syndicate of banks. And we have also issued $500 million green bonds again, which has been exclusively listed in the GIFT City stock exchanges, both India NX and NSE. This year, we have also finalized the lease agreement for funding of railway projects, both EBRIF, that is Extravagant Resources Infrastructure Financing, as well as the national projects. So the railway projects, EBRIF, we have entered into lease agreement for the loans that were given in the year 2015-16, and national project, the loans which were given in 18-19. So we have entered into, heretofore, previous to this, we were entering into lease agreements only for rolling stock. From this year onward, we have entered into a lease agreement for the project assets also with Indian Railways. I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. You can look at the financials, the P&L statement and the balance sheet. We have now, you'll be all glad to know that we have now become a 4.5 lakh crore balance sheet company. And this is all thanks to your support. Now I'm open to any questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Harsh Shah from L&T Mutual Funds. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Hi, sir. I hope everything is good at your end.
Hi. Yeah, thank you.
Sir, congratulations for a very strong financial year 22. Performance has been very strong, but I have a few questions pertaining to this particular quarter. Sir, ideally, our Q4 is comparatively the strongest quarter in terms of disbursements, but that has not been the case this time. So, has there been any spillovers?
No, actually, what has happened is that last year, this 2021 was a one-off year. It was a COVID year. The entire economy was, for the major part of the year, was under lockdown. So there was a lot of fiscal constraints. And therefore, the recourse of Indian Railways to IRFC funding was quite that much more as compared to other years. So that was a one-off year. That is why the Q4 figures in last year was quite high. But if you see the financials of Q4, that has not been majorly impacted by the disbursements, because the total turnover in Q4 has increased year on year by 33%, right? And the expenditure has risen by 49%. So that accounts for a lower growth in PAT. That is your area of concern, probably, because it has only increased by 0.7%.
PAT is not the concern. If you like, for example, I was going through the slide 4 of the presentation.
Yeah.
If you look at FY20, total disbursement was around 71,000 crores. FY21 was 1 lakh crores.
Yes.
This year we have closed at less than 60,000 crores. So even on a quarter-on-quarter basis, comparing Q4 versus Q3, the disbursement is down somewhere around 5%.
Yes. So as I mentioned in my opening statement, that this year the GST collections were much better, the revenue position, the fiscal position of government was much better, and therefore the GBS portion, the government budgetary support, which funds a major part of the CapEx requirement of Indian Railways, that was higher. And that was comparatively much higher as compared to say, FY 2021. As a result of which, the disbursements in Q4 proportionately was low as compared to Q4 of the last year. That is all. That is the only reason why it was not because of any kind of a systemic change or any kind of different policy of the government, nothing of the sort. It was only because of the better fiscal position of government. Because everybody would like to have a lower loan portfolio, for obvious reasons. If you can afford to fund your CapEx requirements from out of your own revenues, why should you go to go-to-market to raise loans and unnecessarily increase your fiscal deficit. So that is the only thing.
So, sir, of the total government capex that was there in FY21 and FY22, how has been our market share shift on a YOY basis for the full year?
We funded about 67% of the total capex of Indian Railways in 2021. Right? It was about 1,04,667 crores as it, out of 1,55,000 crores of capex. Now here in 21-22, the total capex of Indian Railways was around 1,90,000 crores. Out of which we funded about 50,000, which is about 32%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So the share, as you rightly said, the share has gone down. But again, there is a a possibility that it can again go up this year, or how do you?
Again, you know, I mean, these things are very volatile, and especially, you never know that. You see, the only thing that I will be able to tell you is that the expansion growth of Indian Railways as far as the, infra expansion of Indian Railways is concerned, that is on an even keel. And that has been growing organically over the years. And as per the National Rail Plan, which is a part of the NIP, there is a, I've told this already, but at the risk of repetition, I'll again tell you, that there's a huge capex plan of Indian Railways, which is in the offering up to 2030 and even up to 2050. Right? So there'll be a capex plan of about north of 10 lakh crore to end of 2030. Starting from 2020. So, and IRFC would definitely be contributing at least one third of the total as it has been doing over the years. From 1986 to end of 2022, we have been funding about 33 to 34% of the total capex requirements of Indian Railways. That has been the growth. I mean, that has been the proportion of the funding that we have been doing on average. So, this is the least that we can contribute, and depending on the requirements of the government, we can contribute more also. So this year also it can go up. So because the initial mandate of last year was 65,200 crores. Finally, it ended at 60,000 crores. That is a different matter. But this year, the initial mandate has also been increased to 66,500 crore. In 2021, the initial mandate was 58,000 crore, but it ended up somewhere at 1,04,000 crore. So, I mean, it all depends, how it pans out in course of the year. One important point that I would like to mention here is that the growth of infrastructure on Indian Railways, that would go unabated as per the National Rail Plan. And that would be absolutely, that pace would not be disturbed, or that pace would not be impacted. It's only a matter of how much of the total proportion would be funded through the government revenues and how much would the government require by way of a loan from IRFC.
Understood, sir. So my second question is regarding again a queue for financials only. So on a quarter-on-quarter basis, and in fact also on a Y-on-Y basis, our cost of fund and incremental NIM has shot up significantly, and which has led to a dent in our net interest margin. So what is the reason for that?
I don't think that is borne out by the facts. Our cost of funds, as a matter of fact, despite the fact that the 10-year G-Sec yield has gone up in this financial year, 21-22, as compared to 2021, by 66 basis points, from 6.18 to 6.84, our weighted average cost of borrowing has gone down by about 9 bps. From 6.51% in 2021 to 6.42%. So we have actually decreased our average cost of.
No, sir, I was asking from a quarter on quarter. So the exercise that I am doing is.
And quarter on quarter, as I told you, quarter on quarter, if you see the turnover and the turnover has grown by 33%. Expenditure has grown by 49%. This is only accounted for by the, you know, CSR expenditure that has been booked in Q4. That is the only reason. Not because of cost of fund.
49% interest expenditure increase is even if you exclude CSR.
It is not interest expenditure.
Yes, sir. I am talking about pure interest expenditure. Your income has increased by 33%. Your interest expenditure only, excluding all the other expenditure, employee, CSR, etc.
No, it's not. It is not like that. I mean, BGM, I like to come in here. Sunil, please explain this fact.
Sir, because this because year quarter to quarter, my revenue has increased by around 1475 crores, and in same proportion my expenditure has also gone up, and in expenditure side our CSR expenditure has gone up and establishment expenditure has gone up by 50 crores. That is why our quarterly profit are at the same level. In Q3 our profit at 1500 level, and in Q4 also we have the same our profit at same level.
Yeah, thank you.
Correct. So I'll take this question offline, very
helpful. You can always connect offline for any kind of clarification.
Sure, sir. Thank you, sir, and all the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Rucha Ambedkar from IDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, please tell me.
Yeah, I have two questions. So first one is, can you please guide on your incremental borrowing mix for the next couple of quarters? You can answer this, then I'll ask you the next question.
Yeah, incremental borrowing mix, it's very difficult to, I mean, we never, you see, the point is we go to the market while raising money. You see, I'll tell you the whole procedure.
Okay.
The government gives us a mandate. The Minister of Railways gives us a mandate for the entire year, right? And then, meanwhile, we go ahead and try to, get into various kinds of contracts with the banks and financial institutions for certain amount of, for various tranches of loans. We do the drawdown of those loans, or we go to the market for issuance of bonds when we receive the indents from the Indian Railways, from the railways, from time to time, so that we are not required to retain this amount in our bank. Otherwise, there will be a negative carry. So, what we do is it's absolutely back-to-back kind of a borrowing and lending.
Okay.
So, at that point of time when we require the money to be given to Indian Railways, we gauge the market and we try to find out which is the cheapest source of financing at that point of time. Whether a rupee term loan would be a cheaper source, or whether we should get the money through issuance of domestic bonds, or we should be going for any other instrument. It all depends or we should go for some short-term loans to keep the cost low. But again, short-term loans is generally a bridging arrangement. You can't take a short-term loan for financing the requirements of Indian Railways. That is just to bridge the time gap between the receipt of these rentals from the Minister of Railways and the requirement from Minister of Railways. So it's just a gap arrangement. So it all depends. It all depends on that particular situation at that particular point of time, which is the cheapest source, and accordingly we do that. So we don't pre-plan anything as far as the how much to be taken through bonds and how much to be taken through loans.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood. Okay, so let me put it this way. In the last call, you had given the guidance the borrowings from banks were in favorable terms as compared to bonds, the directional guidance you had given. So similar guidance you would like to share right now?
No, I mean, you see, I'll tell you, I'll give you a simple instance. In 2021, for instance, or I'll just tell you, just a minute. I don't have the figures right now. Just a minute. No, I don't have the figures of the source-wise borrowing that I have given, that I have taken. But if you see, just a minute. I do have certain figures. You can just share some of the. You know, this year, for instance, we have, since the bond yields have gone up quite a bit, as you are aware, in this financial year, so we have taken recourse to more of structured loans from the banks, which we got at a very nickel rate, and we did not take recourse to bonds to that extent in to which we had gone in 2021. So that depends on the market scenario. So therefore, I think this year we have just gone for about 20,000 crores. Only one-third we have taken by way of bonds. So that's really, I mean, it all depends. So last year we had taken more of rupee term loans because we got a very competitive rate of interest. I mean, it all depends how the market pans out this financial year. Of course, it will be quite challenging with the repo rate having gone up, and there is an expectation of further increase in the repo rate in the June quarter, in the June MPC. So we are all waiting with bated breath how the market behaves, and the bond yields have also gone up pretty considerably. The international markets have also gone up because of the Fed rate having been increased, and further guidance on increase in Fed rates going ahead in this calendar year. So the market is going to be quite challenging for us, and we would have to take a very informed call and extremely cautious call, because we have to keep the cost of our borrowing to the minimum from the available sources of funding. And our basic aim is to actually diversify our borrowing portfolio. We are now trying to rope in other agencies also. We are in talks with various multilateral agencies whom we have not transacted with so far, like the BRICS Bank, the New Development Bank, as well as ADB. We are also in talks with World Bank for giving us a guarantee, for green loans. So they have already offered us a guarantee of $1 billion for raising green loans from the international market, which will help us in reducing, not only reducing the cost of borrowing, because we'll have a greater gamut of lenders, but also the tenor of those loans can also be increased. That would go a long way towards balancing my ALM position and so on and so forth. So it's a very dynamic call that we take from time to time.
Okay, understood. Understood. So my second question, so actually it's a clarification I wanted. So I happen to notice that in the latest budget document, in the expenditure profile section, this 66,500 crore, which is our mandate for FY23, it is shown under the internal resources column for IRFC. Unlike the other PSUs like HUDCO, or you compare with IOCL, there the bifurcation is given as internal resources, and whatever are the market borrowings are shown under the heads of whatever the respective source of borrowing. So can you please explain, I mean, what does this imply? Why is it like this for IRFC?
You see, this is something which is in the arena of the ministry. We don't have a locus standi in that kind of a thing, but why it is under, because I mean, you can connect offline to our people, and then we can get a clarification from ministry that why is it categorized as sources unlike other PSUs. That can be, I mean, this question can be addressed offline.
All right. Okay, I'll connect with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Shabbir Kayumi from Systematics Group. Please go ahead.
The other question, please.
Mr. Shabbir Kayumi, can you please go ahead with your question?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, about the margin spread, IRFC has kept this margin spread consistent from last 4 years. So is there a possibility of incremental by some bips in rolling stock or a project assets going forward as the borrowings from the Ministry of Railways is incrementing?
Well, we have placed our request with Ministry of Railways for increasing the margin. They are considering that request. So it's up to the Ministry of Railways to actually, because you know the one thing that you must remember is that if there's an increase in margin, of course, I mean we have asked for an increase in margin, but keeping in view the present state of the fiscals, it will be a tough call from the ministry's side. But be that as it may, we have already placed our request for increase in margin. From the present level, and it is under consideration of the ministry. And
okay,
as and when we get any information, we will keep you updated.
Now, understanding the National Railway Plan of 2030, as they are saying infrastructural growth, so possibility of giving more spread margins to IRFC.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Priyanka Cheda from Standard Chartered Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Priyanka Cheda from Standard Chartered Securities. Sir, I just have one question. On the dividend policy, I reckon that we are governed by DIPAM guidelines of 30% PAT and 5% or 5% net worth. So just wanted to understand whether this is minimum dividend or there is no cap to the maximum, or this is the maximum dividend?
Yeah, this is the minimum dividend that you should give. That is the DIPAM guideline, that it is either 30% of PAT or 5% of net worth, whichever is higher. So this is the minimum dividend. You can give any amount of dividend that you require, I mean, as per the guideline.
Yeah, thanks. So sir, we have declared 1.4 rupees dividend for FY22, which is exact 30% of the FY22 EPS. This is in line with guidance with the minimum the requirement as you mentioned. So sir, what stops us, you know, declaring more or higher dividend from here, given that we do not have any equity funds requirement going ahead?
No, that's not true that we don't require any equity funds going ahead. You see, it's an NBFC. So we have to work on a certain leverage ratio. Now, we have been working on a leverage ratio of 10 right from inception. And that is the industry average also. Generally, people limit their borrowings to 10 times their net worth. Now, I'm already at 9.47 to end of FY22. Now, if I want to take more loans, since I am mandated to take to raise loans from the market at a very substantial level, I have to ensure that my accretion to net worth, the net worth is augmented on a year-to-year basis at a rapid pace. Otherwise, the occasion for further infusion of equity would be required. So we want to avoid that particular option of augmenting my net worth through equity so that my EPS does not suffer. And that is why we try to keep a balance between the dividend payment and the accumulation of reserves and surplus. So I must have a good reserve and surplus also with me, especially because I'm an NBFC and I have to raise loans based on the size of my network. I can't go beyond a point. So that is why we have to keep a balance. Having said that, we are distributing dividend as per industry practice. Almost all the companies, they are paying 30% of their PAT. I mean, all the companies under the public sector, they are paying 30% of PAT as the dividend. And we are also following the same path.
All right. Thanks for your detailed answer. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Santosh Kesari from Kesari & Co. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, just one question I have. Looking at your balance sheet of 31st March 22, I can see the equity and total equity funds of 41,000 crore as of 31st March 22. Now, I understand that this also, the fund here, the assets representing this equity, total equity, has also been lent to the Ministry of Railways. So the yield on, can you tell me the yield on these equity funds? On 45 crore, are we earning as much as 8%? And if that is so, that can we say that on a steady state basis, 3,200 crore will be my profit every year, at least the yield on the equity funds?
Yes, Sunil may like to answer that.
Our yield on equity is around 15%, as our CMD sir has already pointed out, and we are hopeful we'll continue the same in future years also.
Sorry, sir, what did you say? 15%?
It is around 15%.
Yeah. 14.87 to be precise, about 15%.
Okay. So that means that only by on equity, you should be earning something like 6,000 crores every year.
We have a equity of 41,000 crore and we are earning a profit after tax of 6,090 crore for FY 2022.
Yes, sir. So your expenses are minimal and on this equity you are not paying any interest because this is your own fund.
Yeah.
So this only bring up to something like 6,000 crore profit.
Pardon?
Because I am multiplying 15% with 45 crore. And I'm getting 600 crore. That's very straight mathematics.
you are just multiplying the margin over the 41,000 crore, but that is not the case. On my own fund, I'm recovering the entire cost.
You see, we can take this offline. I mean, you can do this.
Definitely. We'll explain everything.
We'll explain everything to you. I mean, we'll give the entire calculation. We'll
share. Sure, sir. That will be very helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Praneet Rathi, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, Amitabh sir, congratulations for wonderful quarter.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, sir, I have one question. Like you said, starting this quarter or this year, we are going to lend to some railway projects. Like right now, over 98% of our books is to Ministry of Railway. So, what other than the rolling assets, what other work we have started, and what is our view, how big it can grow or how it can add to our profitability in next coming quarters?
No, you see, we are basically funding the railways on two accounts. One is the funding of rolling stock. The rolling stock constitutes the train sets, the passenger train sets, as well as the freight train sets, the locomotives, coaches and wagons, and so on and so forth, track machines, and so on and so forth. This is the what we call as the rolling stock technically. The other portion is the project assets, what we categorize under EBRIF in Government of India. It is called extra budgetary resources, infrastructure financing. Now this comprises of many elements, principal of them being, say, gauge conversion from meter gauge to broad gauge. So conversion of these tracks from meter gauge to broad gauge, because there's a uni-gauge policy which obtains on Indian Railways. So we have to have a uniform gauge throughout the country. So that is one project, major project. Then there is multi-tracking. So whenever there is only single line operating, we have to double it. So it's called doubling. Where there is two lines are there, you have to augment the carrying capacity of Indian Railways. You can do triple tracking. So either it's doubling or tripling or quadrupling of lines. It can be station development, station redevelopment. It can be upgradation of signal and telecom equipment. It can be IT development on Indian Railways, construction of service buildings and station buildings and so on and so forth. There's umpteen number of projects which you have, which comes under the project assets portfolio. So going ahead, this CapEx expansion program for Indian Railways covers all these assets besides augmentation of the rolling stock requirement. So there is a huge scope for IRFC to fund these requirements, to fund these CapEx requirements of Indian Railways going forward as a part of the National Rail Plan 2030. So this is the guidance for the next decade or so.
Okay, thanks, sir. Sir, in your last call as well, you said our net gearing ratio, you said something about like we can go above 10 or...
Yeah, that still remains. Incidentally, we are at 9.47 right now. We have not had the occasion to breach that 10, but we are absolutely okay with going beyond 10 with our capital adequacy ratio at 440%. We are comfortably placed because most of the loans are to be sovereign, so we don't face any kind of a risk of going of our net gearing ratio going beyond 10. I have maintained that earlier. I maintain that even now also. If the occasion demands, if the requirements from Indian Railways goes past that level, that we are supposed to go beyond 10, because we don't want to infuse equity at this point of time. So, therefore, additional equity at this point of time. And if the reserves and surplus is not adequate to raise my net worth level to that extent that I can borrow the requisite amount from the market, then I'm absolutely okay going beyond 10 as far as the net carrying ratio is concerned. I still maintain what I said earlier. As and when the occasion arises.
Okay, sir. My last question, any idea by when, Government of India would be selling their, or maybe OFS would come, which would cause. So right now, sir, individual investor, we are thinking maybe OFS will come and then the government will sell the stock at discount. So, sir, is that the reason OFS, people are thinking OFS would come and the share price would fall? So, because our stock performance is not been up to the profits that we are doing. So,
yes.
Your views on that?
So, that call would be taken by the Government of India. That is for DIPAM to take a call. We don't take a call as that when we will come with the OFS or fresh issuance of shares. It all depends. I mean, what call the government takes. That on that, we will not be able to give any prognosis. So, but as of now, we are okay with the equity portfolio that we have, and we don't want to increase as of now. But as and when the government comes out with the requisite instructions to go for the remaining 11%, we will definitely intimate you.
Yeah, sure, sir. Thanks a lot, and I wish you all the best for.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Venil Shah from PL India. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. A couple of questions have already been answered. I will just pose two more questions. The spreads that we operate on, which is 0.4% for rolling stock and 0.35% for the project assets, is there any scope for revision to this number for FY23, or do you envisage even for FY24 that number to change? And B, my question is, till when do we envisage the zero tax status to continue for us? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Okay, as far as the first part is concerned, I have already given a detailed answer to that. We have already presented to Minister of Railways, and it is under active consideration of Minister of Railways. Number two, the zero tax thing is going to go for quite some time because of the availability of the unabsorbed depreciation balance that we have, and going forward with the acquisition of more assets, the balance of this particular fund would increase, and that would keep the taxable income at a zero level or below for quite a few years to come.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sri Ram Prasad, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, please.
Hi, sir. Good evening and congratulations on a good set of results. Sir, my question has a lot to do with the share price performance. I mean, we are at a net worth of 40,000 crore with a market cap of 28, which is about 70% of book value, but we are still generating 50%
ROE. Would you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
No, sir. I'm saying we are at a net worth of 40,000 crore.
Yes, 41,000.
You know, 15%. But still, yes. The market price trades at a book value of about 70% or 75% of what the book value is.
This seems like a very heavy
undervaluation in the share. I know the team is doing well on operating metrics and all, but I think everybody on this call has an interest in seeing the share price appreciate. And I think the only way to do it is to increase dividend. For that, the reason I keep hearing from you on multiple calls is that we have a gearing ratio limit of 10% because that is where NBFCs are trading at. That is what NBFCs do. But frankly, no NBFC has a CRAR of 430%. So that's a unique advantage that we have, that our risk-weighted assets is so low. So my question is, why the fascination with respect to that gearing ratio, or keeping it at 10% and not increasing the dividends and helping the share price and supporting the share price? Because I think the government is also interested to increase the share price to offload its stake, right? And if you still believe that the 10 gearing limit is what we have to be at for some reason, Why is it that the company is not actively looking at securitization so as to as another means of financing to actually increase this price? Because on every call, we keep hearing this thing, the dividend, and we are always hitting that 10 limit.
You have already made your point. Let me respond to it. You see, all your points are extremely well, and they're very, very relevant, very, very pertinent. Now, I'll give you one by one. As far as this dividend is concerned, as far as this share price is concerned, we are interacting with the investors on a regular basis. I'm interacting with various fund managers. I'm investing with major investors. I'm interacting with other potential investors also who have not subscribed to our equity portfolio. And on a weekly basis, I'm having calls with them. I'm physically meeting them. I'm traveling to Mumbai on a regular basis and meeting various investors. And everybody has the same story to tell, that there are certain issues with you, which has got nothing to do with dividend payout. Now, I have got a contrarian view that you should not be paying out so much dividend, that you should you should there should be more accretion to your reserves than surplus balance, but I mean there are but you know, if you look at the if you look at the history of our share prices, if you look at the Denko statement, you'll see that even after declaration of dividend and even after, you know, whether it is interim or final, I have not seen a perceptible change in the share prices. So saying that the share price would increase automatically with the with raising of the dividend, I don't think that is borne out by the facts, or that is borne out by by historical data. So that is a moot question. I mean, you can have an opinion, that opinion I respect, but there is a contrarian view also that you should not be paying. But only point is that I am not paying dividend which is below par, or which is not in keeping with the market standards, or not in keeping with the market tradition. 30% of PAT is a pretty good dividend, and most of the investors who are already invested in our stock, they have actually commended us for giving a good dividend yield. Even today, it is about around about 6.7 or 6.8%, which is pretty good dividend yield. Now, my point is that yes, we have got a huge equity base which accounts for almost 30% of the total, more than 30% of the total net worth. So that is a bit on the heavier side, but of course, I mean, there was no alternative to that. We had to raise a lot of funds initially. And with this kind of a margin prior to listing, obviously the equity route was the only way in which we could raise money from the market, so that we are able to have that, the leveraging ratio up to 10. Now, yes, I mean, just to breach that 10 I dole out dividends, more dividends, I think that would not be the right course of action. That is what the company feels. So we are going as per the DIPAM guidelines, and dividend payout ratio is pretty good, as well as we are also open to the idea of going beyond 10 as far as the dividend ratio is concerned going forward. Now, as far as your securitization issue is concerned, this is our priority area this year, and we are in the process of floating an RFP for securitization. Very shortly, we'll be coming out with an RFP, and we'll securitize a considerable chunk of our receivables in near future. And we shall do it in tranches. And this suggestion was given earlier also, and we have taken a very we've taken a view on this, and we will be going ahead with securitization in this financial.
I'll just like to end with a clarification that I'm not saying that the dividend payout will necessarily increase the share price. But the fact that the dividend is high is a way of rewarding the shareholders who have not been rewarded with the share price. There's a difference is what I'm trying to bring out. And maybe
Thank
the share
much,
price
sir.
Is languishing at wherever it is because the dividend is not deemed enough. I mean, if the investors are happy with the dividend payout, the share price should be higher is my personal opinion. You might disagree, but I would leave it at that, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, we respect your view also. I mean,
sure, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Ashish Shah from Business Match. Please go ahead.
Hello, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
I'm slightly new to the company, so please pardon my ignorance on the company and its understanding. I have one question on, you know, from your presentation on slide 3, where we have shown our share, of funding to Ministry of Railway. So can you help me understand that, you know, in FY18 or 19, when the share was 36 and 39%, where was the balance funding coming from? Was it Government of India? Or who was the other, where was the other share going to?
Just a minute, let me look at slide 3. You are saying that it was 36%.
Yeah.
In FY18. Yeah, prior to that it was still less. Yes. So the balance was coming from GDS.
Sorry, the balance was coming from
the government budget. The government budgetary support that was coming from the government revenue.
Okay, so sir, the other way to look at it, which would mean that whatever will be the debt borrowing of Ministry of Railway, we would remain the sole agency or the sole arrangers for debt for the company, for Ministry of Railway?
Precisely.
Okay, sir. That's very helpful, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nilesh Doshi from Prospero Investment. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Hello, guys. Can you hear me, sir?
Yeah, we can hear you. Please go.
Oh, thank you, sir. Sir, my question is related to incremental borrowing, disbursement, and AUM growth. Because I've gone through the result, quarter four result, there was mentioned that incremental borrowing for the year FY22 was 63,908 crores, whereas the disbursement is only 59,899 crore, and AUM growth is only 55,159 crore. Why the disbursement is lower than the incremental borrowing and AUM growth is lower than the disbursement? Can you guide something on this?
You see, I would like Sunil to come in, but before that, I would just like to mention here that the borrowing might be more than the disbursement, primarily because we also borrow money to redeem our other loans for the purpose of refinancing of the the costly loans. We sometimes refinance the costly loans by substituting it by a low cost loan. And there are other redemption requirements also. So we have to redeem the bonds, we have to redeem the loans that fall for redemption in due course of time. So that is why the amount that we raise would not tally with the amount that we disburse. And this,
but sir, is it an incremental borrowing or only the borrowing? Because of, I consider the incremental means once you are redeeming, that is not your borrowing. And you are replacing the one low-cost borrowing
Yes. So
therefore, I am asking, the incremental means the net increase in the borrowing.
Yes,
so that is.
I get the point. I mean, if we are refinancing, then it is not incremental borrowing. That point
yes,
is well taken. That point is well taken. So incremental borrowing, jo hua hai, 64,000, wo zara reason bata dein.
Basically, as CMD sir has explained, we are following a leasing model, and on half yearly basis, we are receiving the lease rental from MOR. These lease rental consist of two portions. One is the revenue portion and the other portion is towards the recovery of capital. This is basically treated as repayment of the loan. So the whatever lease rentals we receive from the MOR, it contains the capital portion also. And that is deducted from the lease receivable. So that is why my AUM is my borrowing is for the disbursement, and that's going to add my AUM. And whatever capital portion we receive through the lease rental, that get deducted from my AUM. That is why these figures are coming that way.
But that is about the AUM. The AUM is.
AUM is a net difference.
My question is, sir, incremental borrowing is, suppose our incremental borrowing is around 64,000 crore rupees and disbursement is 60,000 crore rupees. Does it mean that we have capped the 4,000 crore rupees, which we could not lend it to the MOR or anything? I don't understand that discrepancy.
Okay. So you have already understood the discrepancy between the increase in AUM and the disbursement. That is well taken?
Yeah. That I understand, sir.
Yeah. So, Sunil, I think what you're bothering, I think probably this Ojha may like to intervene. Ye jo 4,000 extra hua hai, which has been utilized for which purpose?
Sir, actually, this was utilized for the purpose of financing our bridge loan we have taken. So, that we have to, we used to liquidate at the end of the year.
That is what I was saying. That we have to sometimes substitute this our low cost, high cost thing with the low cost one, or short term loans we have to substitute through by rupee term loan. Now that short term loan would not be coming in the as a part of our disbursement. So that is why this extra that you are seeing 4,000 crores. That is to substitute the short-term borrowing that we do off and on. At the end of the year, we try to replace it with the with a proper either rupee term loan or bond, as the case may be. So in this particular case, it was through a rupee term loan that we had to retire the short-term loans to keep the short-term loans at the end of the year to the bare minimum.
Okay, sir. Sir, my next question is related to quarter four net interest income. See, in quarter four, our operating income has grown from on a quarter-on-quarter basis from 5,095 crore to 5,931 crore rupees. At the same time, our net interest income has fallen from 1,604 crore to 1,578 crore. Our operating income is growing by 18% and net interest income is falling. Does it mean that we could not charge, or because we are the fixed margin business where we have a margin of 40 basis point or 35 basis point. So our net interest income should grow whenever there is a growth in the operating income. That is our understanding. Please explain.
Yes, Sunil.
Sir, basically, we are financing two types of assets, the rolling stock assets and the project assets. So for the project assets, we have a moratorium of 5 years. During the moratorium period, we recognize as a pre-disbursement lease income. So that is the pre-disbursement interest income. The reason of increase in the Q4 is mainly because, as CMD sir explained, we have signed the lease agreement for EBRIO 15-16 and National Project 18-19. On these assets, earlier we were recognizing the pre-lease interest income. That portion, now the agreement has been signed. Now these assets have been shifted to the leased assets, and on these assets now we are recognizing the lease income, not the interest income. That this is the main reason of the difference in the variation in the interest income.
Sir, does it mean earlier we were earning the 40 basis point net margin and now it is under the 35 basis, and that is the difference?
We will continue to earn 35 basis on these project assets. Now the head has been shifted. Now it has been shifted from the pre-disbursement interest income to lease income.
Yes. But by that,
you will see a corresponding increase in my lease rent. Please income.
No, I would request the you got a very good question. If you can just connect offline, because the other investors
yes.
are also there.
Yes, sir. Okay. That's
we will give you a full clarification on your issues. Your issue is well taken, and we will give a full clarification. Please connect offline.
Okay, sir. My last question, sir. In FY22, our disbursement.
Mr. Doshi, can you please fall back into the queue, because...
Okay, nice. Thank you.
Thank you. I think it's already 5-5, so we can just take the final question if you can.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, please restrict to not more than two questions per participants. Our next question is from the line of Sri Vallabh Kulkarni, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Can you be a bit louder, please? Mm-hmm. It's a bit, you're not.
Can you sound?
Yeah.
Can you hear me properly now?
No, it's okay.
Yeah, so you might be used to delivering good results, which I can see, and very much congratulations for the same. I have two questions, Ms. One is related to memorandum of MOA, whichever you changed 2-3 months back. I can see you have added the point like you can finance to any infrastructure project now on. Does that mean you are going to finance for road projects or any of the infrastructure projects other than railway project? If so, then have you got any traction in that segment? Because I can see some of the comments from that meeting with Korea and all other that they would like to accepted in NBFC for those kind of activity.
You see, we are in the process of widening the scope of activity of IRFC. As of now, the mandate says, which while the object clause of the Memorandum Knowledge Association, that we can lend to any sector. It can be public sector, it can be private sector, which has a backward and or forward linkage with Indian Railways. Now we placed this proposal for widening the object clause from this to any infra sector. And any infra sector means any infrastructure sector in the country we can finance to. And this has already been approved by our board of directors, and it is presently under active consideration of Minister of Railways. And we have already given a presentation to Minister of Railways, and they are actively considering it. As and when there is a traction on this in this particular regard, we will definitely keep the investor community informed.
Okay. And the second question on the sector, like we discussed several times about dividend and all those stuff, but I do feel IRFC is not like a dividend income company, it is growth company. Ideally, you don't have to give dividend that much. Ideally, if I would be like recommending something, then I would be recommending buyback. Because if you see the if you are trying to put give the money in dividend, the dividend yield down the line in 10 years will be much higher than the interest which you are going to raise from the market. So if I will be recommending something, I would definitely recommend that go for buybacks, aggressive buyback for each and every quarter. That will reduce the equity number of shares which are floating into the market. Because if you see, IRFC will definitely grow over 10 to 15 years. There is no doubt about it. You can also envision easily about that. So rather than spending dividend income, why can't you buy back? If you can see, it's a very cheap price. And if you see down the line in 10 years, whichever the dividend you are going to give, it might be the same price which current share price or more than that. So ideally, if you take the same 10 years interest or the borrowing from the market, rather than investing that dividend income or giving dividend as a loan to the
No, we get your point. So we take note of your opinion, we value your opinion, and we shall definitely take this into consideration. So yes, I mean this is one of the ways that we have discussed with other people also. There have been varying ways in which they have come out with there are lots of suggestions, and we will keep this suggestion also in our minds when we take a call from this.
No problem.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I think we can call it a day if the organizer permits.
Thank you. As there are no further questions and due to time constraints, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Amitabh Banerjee for closing comments.
Well, thank you, dear investors. I mean, you have been extremely cooperative and through the year, and we would definitely, thank with all sincerity the kind of support that you have given to the company. And I would like to mention my special thanks to the Government of India, with special reference to Ministry of Railways, DPRM, Department of Public Enterprises, and other major stakeholders who have helped us in our endeavor to make this company vibrant and to keep it as a niche company, as a niche NBFC company in the public sector. And I thank you all for having spared your time, valuable time to be in this investor call. And we look forward to a very robust performance of your company, IRFC, in future also. We value your suggestions. We will take note of all your suggestions that you have given in this conference call. And we would definitely take cognizance of all these suggestions. Thank you very much, and God bless you all.
Thank you. On behalf of DAM Capital Advisors Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.